start broadcasting. You wouldn't believe it, folks. It couldn't happen to us.
Digital identity. Who we are on the web. Who holds our data. The new flesh. To graft this new flesh. The computer screen has become the retina of the mind's eye. And reality is less than the network. The time has now come to reclaim that control and embody the new flesh of the web.
The DS-106 could spell in 106 bullets on DS-106 Radio for life.
So, this is live and kicking the DS-106 good spell. Futzing certainly tonight, been futzing since 2013 on the DS-106 Radio for Life. This will be one of 106 bullets from the blog post 106 published by the DS-106 Shrink at 106am on Tumblr at the end of the headless 13 run of DS-106. Our hashtag, #DS106spell, tweet us please. Gospel radio for the DS-106 generation. Mantras and koans explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. We'll have meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I am John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Yay, we made it live! Good evening, John.
How are
we doing? Futzing splendidly since 2013.
Yeah, a bit of last minute futzing tonight, of course. I'm desperately trying to get this look back at working. It seems to work for a while and then just drops out. So, more explanations or explorations needed there. But for tonight, we will go on with the bullets. Let them fly. So, this bullet, Mariana, is, if I can scroll down this deal, number 70 and 71. 70 is, DS-106 is located in this area between delight and discomfort that Charlie Bruckner talks about in Black Mirror. Delight at the serendipity and openness, discomfort at the very real possibility that data becomes the new flesh. That's a bit scary sounding, Mariana.
No, we're going to be dark today.
Yeah. And I think the next one, which you're including here in this episode, is quite appropriate for today, this last couple of weeks for the news and stuff. We worship at the altar of Google and Apple. Facebook algorithms know us better than our parents.
It's a Charlie Brooker.
Quote from Black Mirror, and the big business enters education. So, do you want to give us some background thoughts on that, Mariana?
Well, the first thing, I suppose, is that if you haven't seen Black Mirror, go and watch it now. That's going to be the first thing one has to say, because I think that is the best thing for a long, long time about, I guess it's a dystopian future. If you don't like dystopian futures, presumably you won't like Black Mirror, but I do think that what makes Charlie Brooker a bit different from your traditional, dystopia with regard to technology, I guess, because that's the specific thing, is that he loves it the same way as we do. And actually, I think that that adds a great deal of power to what he says and the stories he tells, because he isn't one of these people that says, give it all up and go and live in the woods, like Thoreau and stuff.
Yeah.
He's saying, actually, the very fact that it is such an integral part of our life means that we really need to be looking at some of the unintended consequences of what we're doing because we like it so much. And that is what the basic thing of Black Mirror is about. And this thing that he talks about, the delight and discomfort, I actually think it's a really nice, it's a bit like you when you talk about, the sort of benign nature of the web, and then, I might talk about the dark side of the web. I think this, when he talks about delight and discomfort, they're nicer words, aren't they? There's a kind of sense of, they're more everyday words that maybe we don't run away from, so much. And what I was thinking when I wrote those really is about the fact that, what we do in DS-106 kind of can be understood in both ways, the sort of delight and discomfort of learning all of the things that we do learn, and that's delightful, and it's a wonderful thing that happens when things come together in DS-106. But then the discomfort side is the kind of thing that happens, as has happened to say Alan Levine and Alec Kouros with the romance scams kind of thing. So there is that kind of constant thing of, on the one hand, it's a wonderful thing, and what we're learning on DS-106 is a wonderful thing. And the very things that we learn and we consider wonderful are the very things that these people are using to take away their identity, And they make jokes, don't they? I mean, this thing about data becoming the new flesh, but when you read what Alan and Alec write about, they talk about it, they say it jokingly, but it's that thing of they're stealing my identity. I don't know who I am anymore. So that's, I guess, one element of it. And I guess I put these two together because, to me, the whole thing about how we use the technology, how we use what we learn, the stories that we choose to tell on the web about ourselves, there is that, again, that kind of dark side underneath it all. We encourage people to use things like Twitter. We encourage people to do lots of things and to have a presence online. And there are consequences, aren't there, when you have a technology that actually knows you better than your parents.
I wonder, I personally don't, and this is just, I'm keeping my fingers crossed here, I never have really had anything unpleasant happen to me on the internet. Apart from spam or something like that, but nobody in Twitter has ever sort of harassed me or harangued me or said anything unpleasant. And I'm reading about all sorts of things. There's big characters like Stephen Fry just bailed out of Twitter because he was getting a lot of hassle. And I've read of teachers who are stopping because they feel Twitter's too aggressive and people are always arguing and trying to make themselves winners and stuff and put other people down. And I don't notice that. it may actually go on my timeline somewhere, but it's not something I'm aware of. And I haven't really experienced it.
I suppose I see it as I have personally experienced certain things, which we may talk about. But I do kind of see it as, if we think about DS-106 as as a community of people, there are quite a few of us. Just take the example of Alan. That is a big thing.
Oh yeah,
to deal
yeah.
with. It's a big thing, and it is. Really, it's really quite close, yeah, in terms of DS-106. And there are, I suppose, I read all the stories, even if I haven't experienced some of them. But what I suppose, so one element is the how people respond and react to you and say how, women have had problems and, particular groups, I guess, have had problems. But then the other element, which I think is what I was getting up to more here, is the very things that we are learning how to do have got both that delight and discomfort. Because what we are doing what we do and explaining process and doing all of the things that, is really making it available out there for people who, should they choose to use it in the kind of way that these people that are stealing identities and doing all sorts of things, they can. But then also, in a sense, I think the big thing with Black Mirror is that the underlying thing, the subtext between it all, in all the episodes, is that if we can, we will do it, and we will ignore the consequences, even when the consequences could be ethically so wrong that because it is comfortable and because it meets a need, we will ignore the ethics. That, I think, is the bigger question. And I think when I was writing this, I was thinking, have we thought about the ethics of some of what we're doing? Yeah. I think it's a bigger question.
Yeah.
Than just trolling or identity theft and stuff.
Do we ever? It's just, I think maybe it's because it's easy that it's more, you get more of it. It's like as soon as somebody invented the printing press, you had opened up the routes for Mein Kampf or, exploitative pornography or, movies, you've got snuff movies or, all sorts of bad things happening with every kind of media. It's maybe just the web is, it's so much easier. I've just got Viv's joke. Thank you, Viv.
I wasn't looking at that. I was just concentrating on our conversation.
It's the first unpleasant thing anybody's ever said to me on Twitter. Thank you. Right. It came in a couple of minutes ago and I was thinking, I've got it now. but it's just easy. And
take, for example, I tell you because not everybody will, the fact that both of these things are related to Black Mirror is kind of limits our million listeners because not everybody has seen it. But let's take one example without, spoiling it too much. The one of the episodes talks about something called the grain, okay? And that what's interesting about what Charlie Brooker does, because he's a really good writer, is that he takes stuff that's kind of embryonic now and then takes it to its logical conclusion, right? So there is one of the episode that deals with this grain thing, appeals to... a lot of us look at link rot and archiving and what can we do to keep everything alive and how the web can become our memory and how it already is, and we kind of, there is a kind of hankering after, what will be the thing that will allow us to be able to archive everything that ever happened in our lives so that, we don't rely on our unreliable memory. I have big issues about that, but there is, a way of thinking that goes like that. So this episode looks at this thing called the grain. And this grain, is something that in this society in the near future, everybody has implanted behind their ear, and it records everything that you do. And at the end of the day, people no longer sit together to actually watch a movie and talk together and have dinner, but they sit together to replay on the TV their day and analyze it and talk about it and so on. Now, you can take that at face value, and as I say, I don't want to say too much more because otherwise it ends up being very, if anybody wants to go and watch it. But the whole thing, actually, the whole episode is effectively talking about here we are, we are searching for this thing that will enable us to remember everything, to have no forgetting anymore. But look at what it can do to human beings, to relationships. So the whole thing, of course, is a big drama about what happens between, with a couple when, they watch the grain, they watch what happens, they remember and all, and they can see things that, they perhaps shouldn't or would never have seen had it not been had the technology not made it possible. So, and that's, I think, what I like about that is that actually it stops. If you watch it in that way, it stops us and makes us kind of wonder, is this something? It's like that, the old question, isn't it? The fact that we can doesn't mean that we should do something. And human beings are pretty crap at asking those questions, really. So there we are. We are going to be dark today.
Yeah, I mean, I'd quite like this grain-like thing because I forget lots of stuff.
You want one so bad.
Yeah.
Exactly, my point precisely.
I'm sure I've watched that episode, but I can't remember it. But if I had, I could replay it or whatever. And then I've started thinking of taking notes of books I read and stuff because I forget plots, I forget, character really fast. So I guess there's a balance to be at. You don't want everybody, and I guess again it's who's got access. Who's got access to the grain or to the and who's got access to your data?
And well, there is that element, but there is also that what becomes the norm.
Hmm.
You know, so I remember in the episode there is this one person who makes the decision that even though everybody's got one and you are nobody unless you have one, she has hers removed, and there is that kind of that storyline of what happens to her in the context of her social relationships because she refuses to have one. So there is that element of it as well, you know, it's like what do we normalize? Kind of like what happens, and you read about this a lot nowadays, you know, we don't really have norms around, you know, smartphone use in company.
Mm.
Different people have different rules. And actually what's happening, I think, now is that, you know, we often clash in terms of expectations. And some people have this rule where they say, we have a phone bucket in the entrance of the house and you put your phone there, because in my dinner parties, you are not going to be talking on the phone. Other people are outraged by that because, of course, you have to keep, you know, in contact 24/7. And it's like, what are the norms that the technology is by default making a reality because we haven't stopped to consider this? Is this how we want to live life?
Yeah, but I guess we're just experimenting with manners and trying to get to somewhere where as many people are comfortable as possible.
Well, except that my experience with that, I mean, I have had a recent experience with the phone, is that people just don't think about it.
Mm. Some people, I think, are very much attached to their phones. I like my phone and happening.
This is a silly example, but I think it's, you know, so I had a friend come over and I've read articles about this. This is kind of something that is going on quite a lot, not just him. But anyway, so he comes to visit and we're having a conversation. And the idea is, of course, you know, I haven't seen him for a while, so we are having a conversation, like you and I are having a conversation. And we start to talk about something factual. The detail doesn't matter. And I say, you know, it's 5 of these. Was it 10? And immediately he goes for his phone to check with Google. Well, right? Was it 5? Was it 10? And I just did it automatically. I didn't even think about it. I said, you know what? I don't need intermediaries for talking to Google. I just couldn't help myself. It just came up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and then we would, and he stopped, you know, right then. You know, he said, I never really thought about this. And I'm doing this a lot now in my life, he said. And it's going to, you know, I'm glad that you pointed it out because now I'm going to go and think about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my wife is not particularly, she's not an internet or a phone person. But she will either use her own phone or borrow mine to look up things when we're talking about them. You know, if we're waiting to go see a movie or something and we're trying to remember what other things some actor was in, she'll check that out as part of the conversation. And I kind of think it's okay as long as I would not take my phone out when I was eating with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if I was sitting in the living room having a cup of coffee, and you know, I might do that. Or if it was in a big bunch of people and they were all eating, but I wasn't talking to anybody, I might have a quick glance at my phone. And if somebody else starts looking at their phone and checking things, and not, I might do the same, I suppose. But there's, you know, a whole lot of different situations.
I guess that some of that, you know, some of those things are quite harmless, and for as long as we are able to have those conversations and say, you know, what do you feel more comfortable with me, you know, if I do this or if I do that, for as long, you know, they are, you know, just social norms which we can adapt and we can change. But I do think that, you know, they do kind of, it can go beyond that when you start to think more carefully about some of the, you know, some of the implications. For example, and we have talked about this, so probably we wouldn't want to talk too much about it, but you remember when we talked about it, about the that those apps that you can have that make you live forever, the Eternal Me, the Ether 9, where you can have your counterpart apart, and you can create on this website, basically you can create your digital presence, and when you pop your clogs, you know, your nearest and dearest can interact with it as if it was you. And I think we talked about this before, but there is, you know, a Black Mirror episode that kind of takes this to its logical conclusion, where, you know, basically people who are, you know, grieving for the loss of a husband, say, in the case of that episode, get milked for lots and lots of money to access the social media data so that you can, you know, pretend that you're still interacting with the person. And then there is the next level, the premium level that you can pay for, where they have, you know, this special entity that, you know, this special AI thing that turns up in your house and recreates your husband. And it seems insane, it seems stupid, and it seems like, you know, you've taken something to a stupid conclusion. But, you know, humans won't notice, and they'll think it's absolutely okay to do that in a few years' time.
And is that not very like what various mediums have been doing over the time? If you read, you know, sort of Arthur Conan Doyle or Harry Houdini, you know, showing mediums, you know, catching mediums out when they were doing all sorts of things, and they were doing it for, in many cases, money. So
brilliant, that's a brilliant analogy. It's so true. So human beings, yes.
The only thing is, I would quite like to set up one up where I was nicer than I am now. Then after a few years, after you're gone, that people begin to think, what a nice guy that was, you know, he's always tweeting really lovely things and stuff. Never a swear word, you know, so maybe we can do that.
Always so patient, always so kind. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The best photos.
Yeah. Ever. You just always get that picture. So the other thing I'm thinking about with what you're talking about is the current business with the FBI and Apple.
Yes.
Looking for the, you know, to get these phones unlocked. Which I guess is the problem about having a lot of data, and obviously this particular phone, it might do something that would be for the public good if they got it unlocked. Mm-hmm. But the general principle of everybody's data being accessible to the government probably isn't a good idea.
That's a lovely example, isn't it, of where, you know, in the moment you go, actually, but this is a good thing. This guy was a bad guy. You know, we should, and you know, and it is interesting that, you know, you if you read around it, you know, there are some people who are saying it's a good thing because this guy was a bad guy, is a bad guy. But I would say that mostly people, possibly because of the way that Apple have responded to it, mostly people are thinking, actually, but, you know, think about the implications.
Hmm.
Think about the implications. You do this now, and then what? And I, you know, in a way, that is quite a kind of more positive way, you know, where people are maybe thinking, perhaps this isn't such a clever idea to force, you know, an organization to do that. And it'd be interesting to see how that evolves. But yes, I think that is an example of how we take something in the moment and not think about the ethical implications longer term. I mean, I think, you know, it is true that we do that in all sorts of contexts, not just technology, and not just in the context of, you know, teaching people how to develop a digital identity on the web. But I suppose, you know, we do have the possibility for, you know, working with people who are wanting, you know, say in the context of the S106, who are wanting to learn all of these tools and techniques to develop a rich digital presence, but then maybe to also have the underlying thing that says, and think about what you do, because there are implications.
Yeah, well, I think in amongst everything else, and I think this is the really difficult thing about learning to do anything with technology is the implications go so far, and it's like being in a classroom with 10-year-olds and you're teaching them how to do something with technology, say, you know, edit an image, make a movie, whatever, and then you have to talk about copyright, and then you have to talk about internet safety, and then you have to talk about, you know, data protection and how you want, you know, want to keep control of that, because maybe when you're 50 you'll not want that picture of you doing something silly when you were 10. It just expands to fill everything. There's so many different bits and pieces here.
I would say that in the context of you teaching, you know, teaching young ones in the classroom, it is your responsibility to do that. And I would say that in, you know, wider in the context of us as educators, it is our responsibility to make people aware of all this, you know, all the implications and the potential, as the potential negatives as well as, you know, as well as the delight, which, you know, it is wonderful and all of these lovely things that can happen, the discomfort side of things. And actually, you know, and when you're making the choice to interact in this way or to build a digital identity in this way, here are some of the things that you need to think about and see how you feel if they were to happen.
And I
don't know, you know, I mean, I have to say, I don't know that that many people do that. You know, I have heard, and I think if you think about the use of academic Twitter, you know, Twitter for academics and open scholarship and all of these things, it is now becoming in some universities like it's the thing that you have to do. There is no longer something that you do as a choice, it's something that you have to do. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that there are some institutions that actually count number of tweets that people are you really an open educator and an open scholar? You do, and if you don't, you know, and you don't do enough, you know, you're not connected enough.
That's a slippery slope, and I think there's a big difference between interacting on Twitter and you know, publishing openly. It's like Twitter.
It's another example of this kind of, you know, that thing that somehow we don't think about the implications. We think, oh, this is a good thing, let's make everybody do it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the best things I ever saw about Twitter, and I go back and forward, and this is an educator who said that, you know, lots of people say Twitter's the best CPD, continuous professional development experience they've had. And this guy said, well, they must have had some terrible experiences of CPT if that's the best, you know, 140 characters is the best, you know. It's lightweight and it's throwaway, but surely reading a book should affect you more, or reading a blog post, or, you know, watching a movie. And Twitter's like, yeah.
But I think that's the thing. It's like, you know, if you then start to use the things that you can count, And actually then say, okay, so then this is what's going to count now. If you're going to be a connected, you know, a connected scholar, this is what we expect of you. And it's not a joke. I wish it was a joke, but, you know, I know people that, you know, that they're being forced to. And I think that is outrageous. It's unethical. Because actually, when you start to open up, you know, like I've been doing when I've been looking at the whole critical internet studies thing, you know, that they act, what are we doing when we're putting all our content on platforms like Twitter? Well, actually, I think it's really rather insane to be forcing people to do this. I'm not sure that I will encourage my students in the future, knowing what I know now.
Yeah, no, and I think if you are, it needs to be thought about with a deal of care.
Exactly. Well, do things like, for example, you know, Catherine Cronin does. She does bring them, but she creates a course account. So then the course account gets deleted after they finish and they've learned what they could do and all of that. And then if the individuals want to pursue it, they can. You know, that's the sort of thoughtful and you know, kind of way of doing this thing. No, it's a fun thing, I love it, therefore you must. But actually thinking about what are the implications in terms of privacy, what are the implications in terms of your digital identity. And as you were saying, you know, I put this photo online today because I think it's a really funny thing. And look at what happens 5 years later when it pops up and I lose my job as a result. for example.
I think the playing with character and creating character and creating online identities is a really good way of learning that sort of thing, though. I've seen some really nice examples of that in DS106, where people create their digital identity. They maybe got one real one and another cowboy one or camper one or whatever. And it's part of the whole storytelling thing of taking another character on.
Yeah.
It's also, I guess, what we do in real life again to some extent. You know, we take on a different character when we're in different situations. But it's
that
a good...
That is nice. That is the other side to it, which is actually by breaking it all up and by saying, you know, you can, this is how you would create something that is, you know, just a fictional character. You're also you're also teaching people this is how it can happen out there in the real world, and you can use that for good because it's good information to understand what can be done. Mm-hmm. Which actually, to be honest, I never understood until I did DS106. I never really knew what was possible. So actually, I would be more likely to be taken in by certain things. Because yeah. I didn't understand what was possible. That's what you're saying. Yeah, I think that's a very valid thing.
Yeah, but also, yeah, creating something and throwing it away at the end of the course is, I know that goes against this, to be of one's own for life, but there's a nice tension there. I just got a nice wee tweet from David Thanks with a link to a presentation about this sort of thing, which we will add to the show notes, and I look forward to reading later. Mariana, do you want to not listen to the next bit of audio now? I say you'll not listen to it. Everybody else will get to listen to it.
Okay.
But you won't. But yeah, I think you've heard it. I'm hoping everybody else will get to listen to it because, as I say, I've been doing interesting things with Nicecast now. We'll play out with a wee bumper that you worked out of this one, but this is... I don't know if I can say a fictional character, but Dr. Oblivion talking about digital identity.
Data is the new flesh.
Data is the new flesh. So let's listen to that if I can actually make this Nicecast thing do what it's meant to do. It should be playing. No. But I can't hear it.
Greetings. I've arranged.
No, you're not
arranged to this broadcast transmission.
They can't hear that.
Yeah, they can. You've got to be quiet for 3 minutes now, Maria.
Digital identity. Who we are on the web. How we frame our physical identity. And the relationships we have with each other. In this increasingly mediated network. Our moment is defined by a seemingly endless parade of third-party social media networks that consume you more than you consume them. It's becoming increasingly critical that we understand who holds our data, the new flesh, and where the balance of control may lie. Perhaps you even personally, bodily, felt this pain acutely when a service you relied on disappeared or began to demand money to graft this new flesh onto their business model. You see, the computer screen has become the retina of the mind's eye. That's why I refuse to appear on the internet, except on the internet. Dr. Brian Oblivion is not the name I was born with. It's my username. Soon all of us will have special names. Names designed to cause the network tubes to resonate. The battle for the global mind will be fought in the internet arena, the World Wide Web. The computer screen is the retina of the mind's eye. Therefore, the screen is part of the physical structure of the brain. The World Wide Web is the nervous system for the human network. Therefore, whatever happens within the network emerges as raw experience for those who participate in it. Therefore, the network is reality. And reality is less than the network. I'm so glad you came to me. I've been through it all myself, you see. Your reality is already half-networked hallucination. If you're not careful, it will become total hallucination. You'll have to learn to live in a very strange new world. The time has now come to reclaim that control and embody the new flesh of the web. I encourage you to listen to that voice inside you and make today the day you take back control. Thank you for your time.
So, Dr. Oblivion there talking about taking control of our data and understanding what's going on, which I think is very pertinent, Mariana. Oh, have I lost Mariana? Mariana?
Yes, you have, because I thought I better mute myself, otherwise I would laugh.
All right.
Yes, I muted myself. Now you can hear me?
I can hear you fine, yeah. Yes, just saying that very pertinent to tonight's conversation.
It's also quite a scary thing, isn't it, this whole notion of what is the value that, you know, our data has, and how do you get people to understand that, you know, that there is a value and that there is a way in which it becomes, there is a kind of, you know, it's you mediated, you know, and actually that there is a point that is not just you posting this meaningless picture on Facebook. I was just looking at the link that David sent us through from his blog, and he, it's a long post, but I was just scanning, and he said, he's summarizing the thing, and I just wanted to read you a couple of bullet points because I think it's interesting. So he says, you know, that as social media users, we are becoming aware of the value of the aggregated data that we generate, that our interactions in social media platforms are characterized by mistrust and fear because we no longer expect platforms that we use to use our data ethically or even to our advantage. Then he says, we expect other people to use what we share to our disadvantage, and hence strategically, defensively, are using use a lot of the stuff that that we post online, and that therefore makes us not be open and always be controlling what it is that we, you know, that we share. And actually, if you think about that, I mean, as I say, it's he's saying much more than that. That was just as a I was just scanning some key points there. That actually DS-106 enables us to do that in a more sophisticated way, because we learn how to create, as you were saying, how to create some of these, you know, artificial identities that then interact and tell a story. But there is a way in which actually it enables us to have more control over the impact that of what we share online and what it has. He has a thing at the top of this thing, which I must read you, at the top, the beginning of his the beginning, because, you know, he uses memes and things like DS-106 stuff. being authentically social is best left to communications professionals. That's brilliant, isn't it?
So we will just continue to be inauthentically social, will we, Mariana? Yes.
It's a good one. I think we should, you know, I'm going to read it properly. But I mean, I think, you know, there is a way, you know, again, taking it back to the bullet and the Black Mirror thing, there is a way in which the future that we are creating, you know, has both, you know, it's the delight and discomfort, and that sometimes I do wonder, you know, I do wonder what it is that we're doing and whether we should.
You're a bit of the thing you quoted in our show notes. If technology is a drug and it does feel like a drug, then precisely what are the side effects? And we're talking about, you know, people answering their phone in a drug-like manner, and it seems that actually looking at an alert has the same sort of effect as some drugs on your brain, and gives you these wee rewards and leads you to expect them and things like that. But it seems unlikely we're going to be able to cold turkey this one, does it? So it's more a...
Well, I give you a preview of one of the daily stillness that will be coming up in the next few days. But I think, I forget which one was it. Is it the Atlantic? Yes, I think the Atlantic has a thing that is called Tabless Thursday. And there is a video that goes with it, and I'm not going to bore you with the detail, because you'll get to see that, and it's not relevant to the conversation. But the idea behind it is that you, for one day, one day, Thursday, because, just to pick a day, you only have one tab open in your browser. That's it. And you only open one. I'm going to do it for next Thursday, I think, I'm calculating, because I want to do it on a Thursday. And I've been following the hashtag, and it's absolutely, because I just thought it was an interesting idea, and clearly relevant to the practicing, being mindful and aware of what you're doing online. And what mostly the hashtag is about is people who basically are failing miserably at doing it. They can't do it. They decide to do it, and they sort of go, oh, I'm going to do my Tabless Thursday, and they send the tweet and the hashtag, and then, they come back later going, shit, I failed. Can't do it.
I think I'd need to have multiple windows open.
Or I was just thinking you could cheat if you've got a Mac, because you can have different desktops.
Yeah. I guess there's something in that.
I was trying to speak to your point of if it is a drug and it has similar effects and we don't really control it, that's an example where something that you would consider simple, which would be we'll just open one, it's fine, do that for a day. Actually, it's clearly not a psychologist who thought about that, because a whole day of that is a long, long time for people who are not able to do that very easily.
Oh, no, good. Yeah. I would probably just
suggest an hour when I do it for mine. I think an hour would be good enough.
I'm just wondering about things like people, I work on a computer largely, and if I could do it, it'd be interesting. I guess they say you can't multitask. You can actually only.
That's the point. The whole point about the video, and I'll put in a link for people who are maybe reading the archive when I publish it. Yeah. That's the whole point. The point is about learning to single task, because we're getting so bad at it, and how in fact we don't know really. We are forgetting how to focus and concentrate on one thing, and that has huge implications on our ability to make decisions and to be, competent in life, really. So that's the point of it. It's single tasking and experimenting with single tasking in your browser, so that you pick the one thing that you will do today because it's the most important thing. And David is saying, is that one tab plus Twitter? So that you can say, I got only one tab, and then go back to the tab.
Yeah, and TweetDeck, yes. I think that's cheating, dude. I think that's cheating. So, let's not try that straight away. I may have a wee shot at it on the day.
I suggest a shorter period of time.
Or I might not, yeah. Because I just think it would be working. But what all these things do, and this is a very pertinent, I think, there's sort of two aspects to knowing. That's probably knowing's aspects, but there's two I can see at the moment. And one is the control of your data, knowing and understanding as much as possible where it is and what happens to it and the consequences and all the aspects of it. And we need to learn about that. But the other is, of course, what it does to us and how we do that. And I think that's where your daily stillness set of tweets helps a lot, because it makes you think, we can't do an awful lot about what Google and Apple and Facebook and stuff are doing to the web, where the government is, that we can know about it and understand it and throw our vote in, I guess, or, you know, pay our attention elsewhere if we don't like one of these big players. But we can't really do an awful lot about it. I mostly ignore Facebook. It doesn't seem to have really done Facebook that much harm. But paying attention to ourselves and how we do things is maybe the thing that you can do. And think about, you know, do I pick up my phone and look at this now when I'm in a conversation with somebody, or do I just say, well, I'll, you know, not knowing who stars in whatever movie won't really kill me for another 10 minutes. You know, and I think that the daily stillness really helps with that sort of thing, of being aware of what you're doing, not necessarily the other side of the coin, which is what the government or the huge multinationals are doing.
And then there is the, you know, connecting another element is the sort of ethical, the ethical angle, and for me that is about sometimes having to have the courage to say no to things, to things that we love, because actually we understand that the implications maybe are not, you know, not conducive to well-being and health and to the well-being of maybe, you know, subgroups of people, not necessarily ourselves, but, you know, it can have impact on other people. And being able to turn away from those things when, you know, like when I offer you the grain and you go, I must have one, because I don't remember a thing and I must have one. I go, but have you thought about the implications to society? And you say, stop that! Give me one!
Give me a migraine there, yes. Yeah. That's what we want.
I think that's the bit that where you have, if the only place you can look is inside, because that takes a lot of work to turn away from those temptations. And as you say, even when you do, I'm not sure that it makes that much impact. Because Facebook hasn't suffered from you. I mean,
but not look. I guess my health is what I can deal with and how I affect other people, and I think that your daily stillness is helping a lot with that, certainly thinking about it a lot here. We didn't talk much DS106 this week, actually what's going on in Western 106, and I must say I haven't seen an awful lot of it. I had a wee burst of daily creates about a week or so ago, but this week I don't think I really connected that much. Is there anything that you've seen that was interesting, exciting? Hello? Mariana? Has she gone away? Oh, I've lost Mariana. I just dropped the connection. I'll ping her a new message, and while I'm waiting for her to come back, we might as well play a wee tune.
Good spell, we're John and Mariana, good spell. They're top and on and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go and give them a tweet. The DS106 Good Spell Show.
Given our lack of Mariana, I think that rounds rather raggedly the show up for tonight. Thanks for listening, folks. Thanks for tweeting. Thanks for corpsing us, Viv. And good night. Cheers.